talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, ghetto. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to
next? Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Show some love for yourself, people. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. What you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people, what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself,
yeah.
Talking to my people,
eyes, but you just don't see
what you're living
at.
Living like you're living,
caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams,
yeah.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
y'all. People,
talking to my people, yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from
with your life,
running like a rare disease,
running like a rare disease.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them in their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're having a good week. Hope you had a good day yesterday and even better day today. And no, hope you have a good day yesterday, a better day today, and an even better day tomorrow. That's right. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, better do, must do, can do, or will do. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if, of course, if it isn't, you got to get it done anyway. So just go ahead and do it, brother and sister. Don't procrastinate. Don't put off today what you could be doing. No, don't put off for tomorrow what you should be doing today. You know what I mean. All right, now. Welcome, brothers and sisters. And let me get these promos in, and then we're going to have a great conversation with my co-host on Wednesday, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix. And you can check.
Good morning, my brother. How you doing today?
I'm doing fine, dear brother. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Beautiful day.
Yes, it is. It is a great day.
Yes.
And we also have with us from across the pond, Brother Paul. How are you today, brother?
And I'm just thankful that I've got the air to breathe, and I'm able to make this very important communication, and I feel privileged, brother. So thank you very much.
Well, no, thank you, because we're going to get in some great dialogue. And I know the listeners and those who want to participate are going to enjoy this particular program today. A lot of good information will be disseminated, and I thank both of you gentlemen. African Perspectives, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you can't listen to us live, you can go to the archives. Thanks to my good friend and brother, Brother Kwaku. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, and you can listen live to the replays of African Perspective. Mm-hmm. Also, too, Acres of Diamonds on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 p.m. And then after that, on Mondays, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. That's also, you can see them on, I think it's YouTube or Facebook. I'll get it. I'll get the exact information, because I don't want to be disseminating misinformation. That ain't me. On Wednesday, today, this evening, that's right, this evening from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. Tomorrow, Thursday, Us Lifting Us with hosts Baba Akima, Baba Kambizi, Baba Brother DJ, Sister Nanana, Sister Shay, and Brother Therm, all of the good brothers and sisters, Us Lifting Us. And of course, Cafe Ulu is open. Cafe Ulu is open right here in Atlanta every Monday, Wednesday, Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. And then on Sunday, on Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And that is the economic development cooperative that Us Lifting Us is on 20. 36 on Sylvan Road in Atlanta. If you want to check out the cafe, We have coffee from Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, Brazil, and others. Great teas, salads. Oh, you name it. Boy, Cafe Ulu is on hit. You can check us out at CafeUlu.com, CafeUlu.com. If you want to check out Us Lifting Us, just go to the website, usliftingus.com. Also, too, our Power Summit is coming up in a week or so, March 16th and 17th. The 16th will be at the cafe with a nice meet and greet. And on the 17th, we'll be at Atlanta Technical College from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. with some dynamic presentations and a panel discussion dealing with all kinds of things that are happening economically with African people, Bitcoin, some investments and so forth. So, and Baba Akima will be on the program Friday. Baba Akima will be on the program Friday to talk about what's going to be happening with Us Lifting Us. If it's Friday and it is 8 p.m., brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening. That's right, time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard from 8 p.m. until Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday evening, Dr. William Rogers from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Black Reality Think Tank. And then Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Nope, brothers and sisters, it is not I. It is Revive with Sister POC from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening once again with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. Also, too, at one of the malls here, the Greenbrier Mall, I met a young brother, Brother Lamar, with We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. We Buy Black. And you can check out WeBuyBlack.com. Go to WeBuyBlack.com for all kinds of good products that are produced and run by us. Also, too, the Republic of New Africa is having a conference, and I'll get Brother Jamoke in here real soon towards the end of the month, from March 29th to April 1st in Detroit, Republic of New Africa. And next month as well, April 14th, the 21st Century Survival Conference, April 14th at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. That's April 14th, Spirituality, Culture, and Survival. Spirituality, Culture, and Survival. The spirituality component will be dealt with by none other than Oshawa Kwesi, the master teacher, talking about African history and spirituality, the origins of the Bible and the Quran. The cultural will be dealt with by Baba Mwali Mubarudi, warrior's character, talking about a warrior's character. And then the survival, the irritated genie, will talk about African survival in the 21st century. So those are the announcements. Now let's get to the meat of this program. And I see Sister Kosua. Sister Kosua.
Peace.
Peace, my sister. How are you doing?
I am moving and grooving.
All right. That's what I like to hear. Keep on grooving. We have with us our Wednesday co-host. That's Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix. Mm-hmm. How you doing, Brother Franklin?
I'm doing fantastic, my brother.
Excellent.
Good. And we have Brother Paul from across the pond in the UK. Brother Paul, how are you today?
Brother, delighted and elated to be part of this program. And I hope I can rise to the occasion.
No, you will, brother. Believe me, you will. Because you always do. You always do. Let's get this discussion started. I know we've been talking about the movie The Black Panther. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it a couple of times now. And I probably will see it again. Because a lot of times you miss things. But one thing became very clear to me. Although I did talk to you, Franklin, before I went to see the movie. And I don't care about that because I don't care about spoilers. You know, in fact, if you make the movie interesting enough for me, and you did, because what you talked about was Killmonger and his character. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I was excited mm-hmm. about him. And so then when I saw the movie, I clearly understood where you were coming from. And I clearly also I also clearly understood why they had to make that character so like a terrorist and so deranged as opposed to a radical, as opposed to somebody who would truly wish to fight for the liberation and sovereignty of African people. Number one, let's keep it real, y'all. This movie was produced by the Disney Corporation and Marvel Studios. Mm-hmm. Although it was written by Coogler,
the brother who directed it. He wrote the screenplay.
Whitten White Censorship, remember? Whitten White Censorship.
Well, I'm quite sure. I'm quite sure once it was written, it had to be approved.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know. So, Sister Akusa, what do you have to say? Because I think you wrote some very good, you wrote a nice piece, a good synopsis on the movie.
Well, yeah. My mother used to talk about butter me up rum. Is that don't drive drunk? Is that we are so starved to see ourselves and to feel the energy that we have in the back of our brain about the richness of our culture and the love that we have for each other. We're so starved to see that, is that when stuff is produced for us, we grab it, you know, as tight as we can, but not realizing what's behind that. Because the European and our colonizer has never, ever produced or allowed anything that is beneficial to us that he knows about. Let me do that, that he knows about. Mm-hmm. Because I also believe in the ancestors, not as a whimsical thing, as something that's real. And that no matter what is produced, there's always a message for us. There's always something that'll benefit us. And Honorable Elijah Muhammad used to say, take the good and leave the bad. So the piece that I wrote talked about the fact that it had colorful sets and had beautiful, powerful women and futuristic gadgets and a masterful mix of exciting stunts and some hints of Black rebellion and possibilities. But all of that is the wizardry of our colonizer, is that while we see all of that, there's still messages that are being given that are not to our benefit. And one of them is the disparaging presentation of Killmonger, mm-hmm. is that we can connect to Killmonger because he's us, you know, but they kill him. You yeah. know, when people say, well, wait a minute, he was the bad guy. Well, was he actually the bad guy? Mm-hmm. You know, that we have a number of brothers and sisters who love Black people, but they love him and say, well, we need to be allies with the European. We need to work in the system. We need to be patient. And the movie sort of co-signs that. It co-signs that because they go to the UN at the end.
Right.
And that whether Ryan wrote it or that was the because I heard that there was two endings, the fact that he goes to the UN and he offers what they had been, what Killmonger asked for in the beginning, that he offers it to the Europeans is another message of wait, is another message of you can't do anything without us, right. is another message of whether it's integration or whatever it is that is anti-race first. Because race first was basically what Killmonger was talking about. And race first was not what Chicago was talking about.
No, T'Challa was talking, at least not at the ending of that part, because number one, what he was talking mm-hmm. about was the isolation of Wakanda, mm-hmm. which was their main mm-hmm. thing, while all the mm-hmm. devastation was going on around him. Brother Paul, did you see the movie yet?
I did watch it. I got three quarters of the way from it, and I have to admit, I'm not going to tell no lies, I actually watched it over the internet. I didn't go to the cinema.
Good for you.
Well, on one hand, that's a good thing, because does Disney get anything from the internet?
Well, that's the point. You know, I have to say this, right, and I have to be totally honest. There was a time when I was a young person. I mean, I actually lived in America for a while. My mother actually sent me to America because she felt that I'd get a better life. Her sister lives in America. I actually mm-hmm. ended up coming back because somebody... situations which presented themselves to me, but I came back. But the bottom line is this. I kind of gave up a little bit on American movies, and this is the reason. Because I felt that they were portraying the African, the Black person as a whole, very derogatorily. You know, they didn't give the Black person, always the first person to die, always mm-hmm. depending on white people. And I just felt that Hollywood, for me, I'm a child of the 70s. one of my favorite groups was Public Enemy, and they made a track called Burn Hollywood Burn. Now, if you listen to that, the lyrics of that track, Burn Hollywood Burn, it breaks down what Hollywood's about. It breaks down the propaganda machine behind Hollywood and the connections with the CIA and the FBI. Now, for me, and not only that, there's one other thing that it mentions. It talks about Hollywood, the wood, the so-called wizards, which were in Europe, used to use to cast spells, right? The name Hollywood isn't coincidence. That's what it represents. It's a spell-making machine, a fantasy-making machine.
That's right.
So for me personally, although I don't take nothing away from the brilliant cast and the directors and the material, I take nothing away from their effort. But for me, I've gone past that. I don't need fantasies to represent what I need to do and what I need to know. All right. But we're all at different levels. So I can't speak for everybody. We are all at different levels. So that's my take.
Well, outstanding. Brother Franklin, what do you have to say?
Fine, I agree with both of the personal speaking on the panel, both of them. And I say they have denigrated the black image so severely that it has obscured our perception of what true black liberation looks like. So we now celebrate a black superhero in a movie filled with white propaganda that favors them. Mm-hmm. And the sister was absolutely right. It was by design that they villainized the character who was about liberation. Mm-hmm. And the hero was the one who went back to the UN and gave his technology to whites.
Right.
Now, white society, people think movies are just movies, but white society have always planted propaganda that favored themselves into movies. To think that white society would make a movie that would be seen by millions of black people globally and not insert their white identifying propaganda into it is obscene.
Mm-hmm.
From the perspective of the white society, it seems irresponsible not to do so. So yes, we are bombarded with their programming. I'll give an example that went into our minds, we didn't even realize it. You know, when you're watching movies, you're in an alpha state, the most objective state, and you're being downloaded with ideas, don't even realize it. It's not like a debate when you're saying, I agree with this or I agree with that, so don't disagree. You're in an alpha state, relaxing, just downloaded. Now, in the movie, we cheered. The villain was the brother trying to rescue us. And we cheered for the white CIA agent who shot down the pilots trying to take weapons to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wait for a second. The white pilot shot down black pilots trying to take weapons to liberate us. And we cheered for the white CIA agent. Yay! Yay! We were cheering against our own demisement. We were cheering against our own interests. We were being programmed that we don't even realize it.
And see, that's the thing that we must understand, is that nothing, just as Neely Fuller said, or Francis Cress Welding said, everything they do in
everything.
In all area of people activity is designed to maintain and sustain the privilege that they have created for themselves at the expense of all their humanity. They don't give a damn.
Right.
Yes.
You know? So, right. Sister Akusa, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was going to echo that. But what's interesting to me is, well, one is that I think Brother Paul said we're at different levels, is that this represents a teachable moment for young people, and it represents a teachable moment for those people who can't see past the colorful sets. You know, so it allows people who do know to step up and do more and have conversations like this. But also, I think it's very interesting that the movie comes out after Jeff Sessions, who is the
Attorney General.
What is he, the district attorney? Attorney
yeah.
General?
Attorney General.
When he puts out a report about black identity extremists.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So those folks who don't necessarily wear our clothes all the time but decide to go to the movie, would they be litted as black identity extremists? You know what I mean? That the people who don't believe that we're at war, then, you know, they don't get it. You know, the folks who know that we're at war and that there's things happening around us that, I think in my piece I wrote that Nellie Fuller said that we were going to see more racial showcasing. And racial showcasing is where you see all of these black people who are successful and they're accumulating wealth and it looks really good, that it makes it makes people like you or I, when we talk about racism or white supremacy, look really silly, because they're saying, well, look at, they did Black Panther, we're moving forward. Well, look at all of the wonderful things. Look at all the people who made money. We're moving forward. That's progress. Well, see, that's part of that
illusion.
White racial showcasing.
Right, that's the illusion.
It appear as though we're moving when we're not moving. Yeah. We're moving back.
Exactly.
You wanted to say, Paul? Go ahead.
The star of the... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Is that, go ahead, Franklin. Go ahead, Franklin.
I was saying, the lead of the movie, Black Panther, reported he made $3 million. $3 million. And the movie has now made nearly $800 million now. It is set to make, it's going to make a billion.
Yes.
So you see, they can put these celebrities in front of us. They put the actors in front of us. But they're not even 1% of the Black population. But they exaggerate that image and say, look, success is here. Success is here. You Black folks have no reason to complain. So, because what it works is people function based upon their perception of reality and not reality. So if you control the perception of reality, you can control the people. So that's why we are victims of the elaborate perception management system. And in this perception management system, we are programmed to believe that it is we who are our own worst enemies. We ideologies that face our minds towards the oppressor never makes a national platform. It's always a narrative about ourselves. And I would be very careful how this program may affect us. And I'd like to say this humbly and respectfully to my brother, Baba. In your intro, you said we treat each other badly. We conduct ourselves badly. But I must say this. You yourself cannot validate that statement without relying on information from white sources. So we must be careful when we allow things programmed into our mind and we do things. That's their weapon. We don't know how to treat each other badly, collectively. That only becomes our reality when we accept our presence tells us.
Brother Paul?
That is so true. Absolutely true. I do have a bit of bias here because I do rely very much on Brother Franklin's work. I love his work because... You know, before I encountered and his expression and his articulation of the work, it's my own experiences, because, you know, some of us have the ability to think critically, and that's important, and not all of us do. Some of us just go along to get along. We absorb everything we see and we just react to it. We don't break it down or analyze it. We don't see it as an assault on our intelligence or an assault on our intellect. We actually think the information which we perceive or receive is there to help us and to guide us and push us through.
Right.
But brothers like Franklin and some of the work I've seen him do, not just the articulation of the work. I know he's got a book, which he's modest enough. Well, I think he should be pushing more of. And his visual images and the way he puts them together is so powerful. And it's powerful for me because it's based on the experiences I see. I recognize that my peers and others around me don't have the ability to break it down. Well, they do have the ability, but maybe they've been trained not to break it down and analyze it. And I think he's right in what he says. We make these statements, and I'm constantly battling with people against this narrative which has been pushed down our throats that we are our own worst enemy.
Yeah, I hate
it. We are our own worst enemies when we fail to analyze the situation or use our righteous minds to break it down and give our own narratives. Then we become our own worst enemies.
Right.
Amen.
Well,
it's like 100%.
Hold on, Frank.
I'm humble by your presence. I thank you. I'm very humble by it. The reason why I don't push it, I will tell you why I may say this. Because the African spirit within me. So we live in a capitalist society. It's all about making money. I believe to just push my book to make money, it's no different than seeing my brothers in chains and charging them for the key. That's a white man way of thinking. The African spirit within me, I share the information. I teach the information. Those who want to buy the book, buy the book. Because it's not about financial profit. It's about the liberation of my people, making people understand. That's why I do. I feel compelled by my ancestors to do so. And I was born this way.
Ashe. We got a caller. We're going to take a caller. We got a caller. A 215 number. 215. Go ahead. you're on an African perspective.
Hey, Brother Oshi, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, Brother Joe, what's happening, man? How you been?
I'm doing fine, Brother Oshi. I must say, I like what your guest is saying. I just tuned in, so I didn't quite get their names. I just tuned in maybe a couple minutes ago.
Well, we have a panel here. We got Brother Paul from over there, across the pond to the UK. We got Sister Kusa right there in Philadelphia. And we have our every Wednesday guest, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix.
I want to say hello and hotep to all your beautiful, distinguished guests, Brother O.C. It's my honor to talk to all y'all, my brothers and sisters. It's an honor to talk to y'all. I like what y'all said about Black Panther and about about Black people, about disillusion. Because, white folks, they quick, like you say, sister, they so quick to point out individuals, whether it be Oprah Winfrey, whether it be Michael Jordan, whomever, they like to point these individuals out and say, well, they just disproves that racism is not there because you just had a Black president. So what are y'all talking about? And it was one of the biggest lies out there because, for the most part, those people I just mentioned, they, they might have accumulated some wealth. That's from an individual standpoint. And number two, a lot of them are still scared to be free Black men and women. With all the wealth they got, they still scared. I mean, I always look at Oprah as a prime example. Not like just picking on Oprah, but I look at her as a prime example because I'm saying Oprah had her own network. She had, and she was on ABC for years with her show, and she right in Chicago. And all those years, she never had Minister Farrakhan as a guest. Yep, she had the Ku Klux Klan on her show, David Duke. She had all these white racists, supreme, when they call them Black people niggas and all that kind of stuff, but she could never have the minister on her show, and she's right there in Chicago with him. I can never stand that kind of cowardice and stuff like that, So I'm saying that show just proves about how controlled these people are. And it's not about whether you like Minister Farrakhan. You could dislike the brother. I'm just doing it from a principle standpoint that you can't have your own Black brother on there, but you can have these white racists bastards, so they call your people all kinds of names and stuff like that. You can put up, tolerate that, though, And then you look at, President Obama and all the stuff that went on with him and stuff. He told him he had a son. If he had a son, his son would look like Trayvon. But yet he was scared to really use his presidency as a bully pulpit to really fight for Black people and stuff. And when people like Brother Muammar Gaddafi, who tried to do things for our people, he helped join in with Hillary, the scumbag Clinton, and others in France and Britain to help get the brother killed. So, these kind of stuff that we just can't overlook and stuff. We got to call these people out for the stuff that they do. So I'm like you, sisters and brothers. I don't begrudge nobody their wealth, but I don't get caught up in the fact because individual Negroes get wealthy, and because they only get wealthy at the behest of white folks, and them Negroes so scared to death that these white folks going to take it away from them, so they pretty much kowtow, and they become gay. Gatekeepers of white racism and white supremacy, they pretty much gatekeepers.
That's right.
All right. That's what they do. They don't use their power to try to fight struggling for free Black, but they scared to death. And so they sit there and go along with Israel. They go along with the United States doing all kinds of murderous acts and overthrowing governments around the world, destabilizing governments and stuff. And what gets me, when I hear white folks and stuff, I get into some heated argument white when they talk about some North Korea. Oh, the Kim Jong-un is a terrorist. He got nuclear weapons. I said, who the hell can kill more people in this history of this world than white folks? Remember, the United States is the only country in the history of this world to drop an atomic bomb on somebody. And they got the damn nerve to sit there and talk about some North Korea. I mean, these people got some gall that the murderous history that they have done throughout the history of this world, just murdering people, just shedding blood, but yet they got the nerve to call somebody else a terrorist. We don't want this country to have weapons of mass destruction. When we know, as Black folks living in America, who we have been the most victims of their terrorism, their bloodshed, their racism, and yet I suppose we worry about North Korea or Syria having weapons when I live under this bastardly white man every day who's killing our people out in the street, shooting down Black women. A Black woman in New York City could have dementia. Clearly the woman got mental problems, so this white devil cop, he felt his only alternative was to shoot this woman down like a dog in the street. This stuff goes on with our people time and time again. They shoot unarmed Black men and women down in the street, even ones that got severe mental problems and stuff. They feel the only thing they can do is to kill them. But yet white boys, clearly you've seen white boys with guns shoot at cops, fight cops, and they find a way to bring them in alive. So we see this stuff goes on constantly. That's by Nellie Fuller. Said, made the famous quote, if I'm wrong, correct me on that. He said, if you don't understand white supremacy, anything else you heard, that's totally confused.
It's confused, right.
And that's the truth and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is clearly what white supremacy does. It makes white folks where they just do all kinds of stuff to our people. And some of our people don't, it's not, you know, they don't get it. They don't see what's going on. They see these things happen, but because they go over top of their head. You have black police officers, and I've seen this right here in the city of Philadelphia, sisters and brothers. They'll be with white cops, and these white cops have brutalized their people right in front of them. They won't say a word. They got the same gun that the white punk cop got, the same gun and bags, won't do anything. But yet that black cop, if he put his hands on a white person, and that same white cop has stepped on him, it's been cases where white cops that went back to their superior officers and said they didn't like the black cop because he was too aggressive when it came to a white suspect. But that same mm-hmm. white cop has no problem brutalizing the black person right in front of that black cop's face. You know, mm-hmm. do it all the time. It's pretty much standard procedure here in Philadelphia. I'm sure like it is in most cities across
everywhere.
The country.
That's everywhere.
You know, so, well, right, so you see clearly what we're up against. That's why I appreciate Brother Oshie for having shows like this and having people like y'all on, this my brother from the UK and my dear sister from Philadelphia and the other brother, because it's about waking our people up and stuff, letting our people know what's going on, how we can continue fight, because we're at war, whether you want to acknowledge
right.
that. We're at war with these people,
that's
man.
Right.
And the only way you're going to be able to when they struggle, you got to know you're at war. As Harriet Tubman, our great ancestor, said, I could have freed more of our people if they just knew they were slaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so having shows like Brother Oshie have is very important. I just sit back every chance I get to try to listen to Brother Oshie's show and participate, because this show is valuable. It's definitely valuable, and I'm just going to sit back, you know, and listen to the rest of the show.
All right, Brother Joe. Thank you so much, dear brother.
You're welcome,
appreciate
Brother Oshie.
In fact, you know, I like that quote about Nellie Fuller. Nellie Fuller said, if you do not understand white mm-hmm. supremacy, how it functions, how it operates, everything else you think you understand will only confuse
mm-hmm.
you. And I maintain, that we are so confused that we're confused in our confusion, and that's how confused
right.
we are. We have another caller.
The last brother who spoke, if I may say.
I hear you. No, go ahead, Joe. Go ahead, Franklin.
And the last brother who was speaking, you could hear the frustration and the pain mm-hmm. in him. He mm-hmm. is absolutely in pain. He's frustrated. He's tired, you know? And that's the reality that we face. And the more conscious you are, the more frustrated you become, because you're awake, you can see. But what mm-hmm. he's experiencing is by design.
That's right.
Because people are being masked. It's called a mass gaslighting of black populations. What white side does the protests of blacks are never acknowledged, and only white narratives prevail. And they continue to do this until we lose fatigue and our momentum for fight against them. It's called mass gaslighting. They always create narratives that serve themselves. So the narrative of the oppressed never gets a national platform. We are never right, and the system is never wrong. And that's how they control us. It's a system that we're under.
That's right.
And we have to recognize that it's a system. It is perpetuated through the media, through propaganda. And every war that whites have fought, they have used propaganda against their enemies. And we
mm-hmm.
are the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's why when we look for justice from our oppressors, from our enemies, that's going to happen. When we look to narratives that support our issue, our side, we're not going to hear it. All
mm-hmm.
the narratives that we hear will be from their position. Only their position prevails. And we
right.
have to understand it, because it's a form of mass mental abuse. And
mm-hmm.
it is real. And you can hear it on that brother when he was speaking. For example, what about talking about Obama going after Gaddafi? We must remember
mm-hmm.
this. Every president is an agent for white supremacy.
That's right, no matter who
every president, once he's sworn in to protect the national interest of the nation, and the national
mm-hmm.
interest of the nation is embedded with white supremacy. It's one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he is sworn to defend white supremacy. That's the reality.
Right. Right.
And I don't care how black his skin is. If the next black president looks like Bernie Mac, which is not going to happen, he
no.
would still be an agent of white supremacy.
That's
because
right.
you have to support their ideology or you get killed.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Paul.
You don't mind if, I last week when I phoned, I asked Brother Franklin not to exclude anybody else, but I thought it was important that he break this down, because often when I tune into the American radio stations, there's a the narrative is a constant, the same frustrations you talked about, you hear in people's voices. But last week I asked Brother Franklin to break down the which I feel is one of the roots of, you know, or the agency which is perpetrating a lot of this narrative, and I asked him to explain the Tavistock Institute. But one thing since that time, something come to mind, because in Britain, when each prime minister comes in into play, they talk about something called the special relationship. And I'm going to ask anybody there, do they overstand by this special relationship which Britain has with America?
Well, because Britain is America.
Right, the United Britain States is still part of Britain.
That's why, hey, listen.
That's why every president comes to be knighted with the queen.
Exactly.
I mean, it's still part of Britain.
Right, it's an extension.
Okay.
In fact, let me say this. What America is an extension of Great Britain. In fact,
right.
I get sick of it because almost every day you'll hear something about the so-called royals. You'll talk about the weddings. You'll talk about the queen. You'll talk about this and that, you know, because that's what the bottom line is. And, of course, that alliance is ironclad. In fact, what America is the military arm of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. And it has bases around the globe. It has almost a base in every country on the continent of Africa. So that's what it is. That's why that relationship is special. We have some more callers. Let me get a couple more callers in. Boy, you guys, I'm really enjoying this conversation. I appreciate it. Let's go. 404 area code.
That's Georgia, right?
Good. That's Georgia. That's right.
Oh, he's talking somewhere.
Hello?
Is it called Ken or can I speak?
Okay, maybe they just want to listen. We'll go to the next one.
Okay.
267, Erico 267.
Good morning, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Brother Ralph. How you doing today?
I'm fine, Brother Oshie. I would just like to call in to say good morning to Brother Franklin, Brother Paul, and I did not get the sister's name.
Sister Akusawa. Sister Mama Akusawa.
Akusawa.
Good morning and good afternoon from the UK.
Yes, sir. And you know, I called in and I heard Brother Paul's voice because I often hear him on another radio program in the afternoon. And Brother Paul, I want to say the information that you bring about the UK, I mean, I know this is a world struggle, and I would love to hear more from you on what our people go through over there in Great Britain, or I don't even want to call it great, but Britain, you know what I mean? And I would just like to hear more from you. Oh, more. I just want to hear more, because I was over in London, like, in the mid-80s, and I just found it weird. It was a little strange. I was downtown London, Piccadilly Circus, Oxford Circus, down that area. And it appeared that the brothers and sisters they act like they were afraid to even address me, where the European addressed me as a Yankee. And I said, like, man, this is the strangest place I've ever been in. You know what I mean? Because I was looking for more love out of the brothers and sisters. But it seemed like the Europe, and it's probably the same way over here. I don't know. But it sort of hurt that I seemed like they wouldn't embrace me. But then the European, he had no problem with it. He called me a Yankee and all this other stuff. Probably called me some other things behind my back, but no, I just wanted to call in and say that I believe, and this is just my belief, that this thing is worldwide. It's not just here in this country. It's over there, too. And I'm a person that I say that we should know I'm a person. We should know him by now. So we shouldn't even focus on him as much.
Can we just deal
with the minds of our people, man. Oh, yes, sir.
Can I just address some of your points you raised? It's Ralph, isn't it, Brother Ralph?
Yes, it is.
I know your name because I listen in and I know your voice, brother, and I appreciate your contributions, brother. But listen, let me give you a little history, make some of that clear.
my parents come from Jamaica. Yeah, that's where they originate from. I have an auntie, my mom's sister, in America, and I have two uncles in Canada, which are my mom's brothers, and my dad and my father had a brother in Canada also. So I've managed to go to these places, and I've had the same experience as you. I lived in New York, I lived in Brooklyn, I lived in Atlanta, all over America I've stayed. So I've had that experience. You know, the reality of it is you find good and bad everywhere you go. Some of the points you raise are quite true. If you go to Oxford Street and all those so-called tourist areas, you're not going to get the feel of how we are as a people. The same experiences, trust me, the same experiences you have living in America. Sometimes we don't greet each other as black people when we know we should. We know instinctively that we should greet each other. But we have taken on that Eurocentric ideology where we mm-hmm. mistrust each other. Mm-hmm. It's the Eurocentric mm-hmm. ideology which we've taken on. That is our appearance. How could we live for 400 years among these people and not take on their bad habits? That is what we know instinctively, no matter where we go on the planet, we should greet each other. It doesn't matter. We don't have to know each other, your name, for me to greet you. That is our way. That is the African way. Yeah. So you shouldn't look at the fact that you came to England and judge it by those standards. You know, because I know that once you get to know the people, once you get past the Eurocentric barrier, then you, mm-hmm. you know, he'll greet you like a brother, just like I'm greeting you like a brother now. Yeah. Yes, so sir. What I'm saying is that we have to, I said this to a person yesterday. Let me say this. We as a people, those who know better should do better. Right. And those mm-hmm. who know better should be empathetic to those who don't. We have to be empathetic to each other. I've heard a lot of talk about name calling and calling people out. I've heard that talk. But at the end of the day, I have to say, if we name call and call each other out, where at the end of the day is going to get it? Where is it going to get us? We've been through an assault, 2,000-year assault. So we're not going to solve it in 2 years. It's going to take a bit of a time. But those of us who know better have to do better. That's what I say, brother.
I appreciate that, brother Paul. And I just want to, I just want to say this also. You talked about Brother Franklin was talking about propaganda. Some of the propaganda we do have to make our people aware of. Like you were saying, brother Paul, we have to be, you know, we have to make our people aware. We have dangerous publications like The Root, Huffington Post, and a whole mm-hmm. bunch of others that pretend to be for our best interest. Well, mm-hmm. actually, they're nothing but a third. They're nothing but warfare against the minds of our people. So we have to make our people aware of these things, like WAOK down there in Alaska. You know, these things have to be addressed, and we have to let them know that if the Democratic Party, if they're pushing a Democratic Party agenda, then it's warfare on our people because they have shown me nothing that they stand in our best interest. So I just had to call in and say I really appreciate this program. I tell Brother Oshi this all the time. I appreciate his time frame and the radio program because at this time, on all these black-owned stations across this country, we have nothing to listen to that would give us real information. And Brother Oshi always said that he's trying to free the minds of our people. And that's what I agree with. I support it. And I love this brother for that. So I just had to call in and let everybody know I'm enjoying the conversation. You know, I got nothing but love for all four of you. And, you know, and that's what I think we miss. We have to really express love for one another to overcome some of those barriers that Brother Paul was just talking about. So I'm going to continue listening. But I just had to call in let you know I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Brother Ralph.
Excellent.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate you because mm-hmm. I'm on this program because of you, and I've often told you that, and I really appreciate you. And one day we'll embrace and give each other love. I appreciate it. Thank you. All right.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Brother Franklin, you had something?
Yes. I address Brother Paul's question. He mentioned it last week, and he mentioned it again today, so I wanted to take the opportunity to give him an answer. First, I'd like to say, my brother, we have something in common. My parents are from the Caribbean also, the Bahamas. We have that in common also. Okay, in regards to the Tavistock Institute of Human Behavior, I totally agree with you. I believe our people have to have an understanding of this organization and what it does.
Now, the Tavistock Institute of Human Behavior, if you Google it now, it has a new name. It has the name is now changed to be the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. And they call themselves a British nonprofit organization concerned with group behavior and organizational behavior. And it was established in 1946. That's the given definition. But it's actually much older than that. And its history is a lot more sinister than that. I'm asking for a minute to just lay this out. And I think that's very important. About 100 years ago, a group of very affluent whites comprising of the J.P. Morgan dynasty, the Rockefeller dynasty, the Rothschilds from Europe, the Warburgs from Germany, joined with the U.S. elites under the Anglo-American establishment. They set into motion a plan to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate political systems of each country and the economy and the world as a whole. In short, they seek to quality control of the world, using Great Britain as a nucleus for the system. This therefore required taking control of the mainstream media, because those who control the mainstream media control the brainstem of a nation's collective conscience. The definition by which people function is greatly controlled by the media. Social norms promoted by the media can influence the way of thinking of a people, because the perception created by the media leads to non-deliberate, thoughtful decision-making. It's been called thinking without thinking. When people are given the same information, they start responding the same way. It doesn't matter that the information is untrue. When they initially started this program, they found out that they could, by getting the 25 major newspaper companies across the world and start putting out information through these 25 newspapers, they could control the masses. As the media grew, they started using it went to television. It went into radio broadcast. It became larger, and they controlled it because they controlled the narratives. During the 1960s, the civil rights movement, the African-American population gained moral favor, the moral judgment. So therefore, America realized that the old methods of maintaining white dominance became no longer morally acceptable, and they had to develop new ways. So they started using these same well-proven methods of mass manipulation to control black populations. This system was developed originally by Dr. Edward Bernays. Dr. Edward Bernays was a mass manipulation expert. He was the first one to take the studies of how to control the human mind as taught by his uncle, Sigmund Freud, and he used them to control what is called the group mind. Mm-hmm. Okay? So you're able to control a targeted population by information you feed to them. For example, if you feed a population constantly to them positive information about themselves, this lifts their self-esteem, this lifts their self-efficacy, and this creates unity among them. But on the reverse, if you constantly feed a group negative demoralized information about themselves, this makes them self-loathing, divided, and it makes it easier to control, easier to suppress. This is the system they're using against us. They control our narrative, they control our image, they control all information about us, and they program into us self-contemptuous thoughts about ourselves. And it's being done in a global manner. There's a divide and conquer. And it's not by design that millions of people come to America and look down at African-Americans, because of the propaganda that's being spread by African-Americans. It's not a coincidence that many Africans come to America and they're afraid of African-Americans, or many African-Americans are afraid of Africans, because we are receiving propaganda. The image that we've seen of Africans is those to be as evil, primitive, violent. So we're afraid as torturous warlords. The image that Africans see of African-Americans are thugs, culturally disconnected. Now, you remember, who controls our image? The oppressor controls our image, and it's served the agenda of the oppressor to keep us divided. So when I go into the Catholic Institute, that's the beginning. And they started using it also against the black population as a means of maintaining their white dominance over us. Mm-hmm. Their propaganda is embedded in everything we see, everything we receive. Their propaganda is in there, in our educational system, in our media, our movies, our TV shows. We're always bombarded with their propaganda. Once you recognize what's being done to you, it's how you start to fight it. It's how you start to resist it. Because a mind, what's exposed to truth, expands, and it never returns to the original smaller size. Each one teach one. We have to stop wasting our time talking about silly, simple things like the wilderness with biblical prophecies, which actually imprisons our minds, which are for the stupid and feeble-minded. And we must wake up and elevate our minds about what's really happening to us. It is social engineering, psychological warfare, and propaganda. Those who control mm-hmm. what we see control what we believe, and they mold our mm-hmm. bodies such a way to serve their interests.
We're going to take a break. I appreciate this conversation. We have a lot of listen, panel, we have a lot of callers holding. We have a lively discussion going on, so be patient. You are on the line. Be patient. We're going to be right back. You know, you are listening, brothers and sisters, to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can call us and be a part of this conversation at 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Broken glass everywhere, people on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage pails, used to be a fag hag. Such a dance to tango, skipped the life and dangle. A zircon aunt princess seemed to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she could tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a pimp, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much, it's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station. Neon King Kong standing on my back, can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane, I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, call, I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school, cause the teacher's a jerk, he must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke reefer, I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper. I dance to the beat, shuffle my feet, wear a shirt and tie, and run with the creeps. Cause it's all about money, ain't a damn thing funny. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. They pushed that girl in front of the train, took her to the doctor, sewed her arm on the game. Stabbed that man right in his heart, gave him a transplant for a brand new start. I can't walk through the park cause it's crazy after dark. Keep my hand on my gun cause they got me on the run. I feel like an outlaw, broke my last glass jaw. Hear them say, you want some more? Living on a seesaw. Don't push me cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Say what? It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song of deep hate. The places you play and where you stay looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, and pushers, and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you want to grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers,
burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turned stick-up kid, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is took and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell, till one day you was found hung dead in a cell. It was plain to see that your life was lost. You was cold and your body swung back and forth. But now your eyes sing the sad, sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Yo, Mel, you see that girl, man?
Yeah, man.
Yo, that sound like Cowboy,
what's
man.
Up,
yo, what's up, money?
Yo.
Hey, where's Creole and Raheem, man?
They upstairs cooling out.
So what's up for tonight, y'all?
Yo, we can go down to the Fever, man.
Go check out June, bro. Hey, yo, you know that girl Betty?
Yeah, man.
My mom's got balls, man.
Not what?
Again, she got hurt.
What is happening? Free, don't nobody move nothing. Y'all know what this is. Get him up.
What?
Get him up.
Yo, man, we down with Grandmaster Flash and the Fever. That's the
problem. Is that a gang?
Nah,
just
man.
Shut up. I don't hear you now.
Yo,
officer, what's the problem?
You the problem.
Yo, you ain't got to push the car. Get in the car. Get in the car. I said get in the car.
Why is he going to
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're having a great discussion here. We have a great panel here. We got Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix. We got Brother Paul from across the pond, and we got Sister Akusa with us as well. Sister Akusa as well. We have some callers, but also, too, this Friday, we have Brother Baba Akima from Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development mm-hmm. Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, and we will he will be talking about the Power Summit upcoming and also talk about the progress we have made with the Cafe ULU since it's just open. So that'll be this Friday. We'll talk with Baba Akima. Monday, next week, Monday, Dr. Renoka Rashidi will be my guest. And because it is March, which is International Women's Month, we will talk about African womanhood. We will talk about sisters who in our past, in our present, and talking about them and doing and honoring them and respecting them for all their contributions to our struggle for forward flow of history. So we're going to get back to the discussion. We're going to take a caller. We got a caller here. And caller 215. Hello. Hello. Well, oh, we'll take another caller. Caller 626. Caller 626.
Okay, this is Sister Rahida. Good morning or good afternoon, Brother Hoshi. How are you?
I am fine, Sister Rahida. Nice to hear from you. Good to see you the other day, always.
Well, you would never guess where I'm sitting right now.
Are you in Are you in Cafe ULU?
I'm right here in the front. All okay. Right.
Ashe.
I got my Danish and I got my coffee and I'm sitting out looking at it. Beautiful day.
You know it is. Thank you.
Yeah. But at any rate, I'm a late caller to this conversation. I think it's mostly about communication. So I would rather just digress and be a listener. But just to let you know that I'm with you and you were on my mind. All right.
Ashe, sister. Thank you so much. No, peace to you. Continue to listen. Mm-hmm. All right. You know, since we're... some of the things that Brother Franklin and Brother Paul, as well as Sister Akusa, have stated early in this conversation, even though we started out the conversation talking about the Black Panther movie and how that movie in itself, because for those of us who not even remotely conscious are just enamored and in love with the movie, some of us who are semi, we love the possibilities of what the movie can present. But those mm-hmm. of us who are truly aware, we understand the dynamics within the movie and what it's designed to do as it,
right.
continues to work on our psyche and our ability, because it kills the African warrior spirit
right.
while continuing to promote the idea of we can't do nothing without the assistance mm-hmm. of those mm-hmm. who have enslaved us, mm-hmm. for those who have control over us. Sister Akusa, you want to say?
Well, Brother Oshie, I thought that for the movie, it was a wake-up call for those brothers and sisters who do know how to analyze and do know the underlining current, because a lot of our brothers and sisters are distracted, confused, as Nellie Fuller talks about. And those people who are not, I thought that the movie was a wake-up call that we need to do more and talk about things more. Is that one of the things, I'm a teenager, I'm a baby of the 40s, teenagers of the 60s, and one of the things that we had that heightened people's awareness is that every day there was institutional racism classes somewhere in the community, that there were, you know, like programs like this, but it was on a regular basis so that people could, we could tap into some of the mesmerized thoughts that we could, the same way the mass deception is being played on us, that we could begin to unravel some of that by tapping into what we know. And a lot of the things that we know is that we are connected and we are suffering some of the same things around the world, and that when we look at what are some of the underlining causes of that, we come to the same conclusion. However, a lot of brothers and sisters are so afraid. I have people who are my age who are still whispering white people. I mean, they won't even say white people. If you say white people, they sort of leave the room.
Yeah.
I have people who will defend the movie, and if you say anything negative, they get offended like you're speaking about them. But really what it is, I think Brother Franklin mentioned it, is that we have such a mental illness, because when you, I'm a psychiatric nurse, and one of the definitions of mental illness is distraction, depression, and despair. And the reason we gravitate towards something that uplifts us is because we have depression, you know, hopelessness and despair. And because we see, we buy into the mass propaganda, like at the law conference this year, we're showing a film called Where is Daddy? And we're going to have a panel on fatherhood, because the mass media says that we don't have any fathers and we don't have any daddies. And that's incorrect. Yes, there are a lot of brothers in prison. Yes, there are a lot of homes that may not have fathers, but our brothers do exist. They are taking care of families, and some of the things that keep us, our families, divided, we need to examine. So I think that it has a dual purpose. One, it has the purpose of the European. We know first to make money, because they always want to make money from us. We haven't left the auction block. They want to make money from us. The other is they want to control whatever we are doing in terms of our own identity. Is the same thing they do with Black History Month. Is that Black History Month, if I ask you what are the four heroes and sheroes that they promote year in and year out, what would you say?
Dr. King.
Okay.
You see, who else would they really be promoting? Booker T. Washington, you know.
Okay, Booker T. Washington, good. Uh-huh.
George Washington Carver.
In fact, when I was a kid, because I'm about the same age that you are, Sister Kusua, mm-hmm. and when I came up, I only learned about two people going through school, mm-hmm. and that was Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver, you know. Mm-hmm. And so once I got into a program, it was a neighborhood program of teaching our young people about their history. And I had to learn myself while I was teaching them, because I was a teenager, you know. But then I learned the anthem, which I didn't know, and I learned about Marcus Garvey and the great inventors and sisters and so forth. So that was really my awakening
as a appropriately.
Sure,
go ahead. Something right, because I have something to contribute to what you just said, and it's relevant to what you're saying right this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I was trained in psychological warfare in the military, U.S. government,
right.
Okay?
Right.
And in their
right.
document, there they teach you about how you suppress a targeted population. Mm-hmm. And it started a war college in Fort Benning. And you read these books, and it says, for a dominant class to maintain their position of dominance over the oppressed must be given an education that denies them a racially and or ethnically affirming curriculum about themselves. When the oppressed is denied a racially affirming curriculum, this victim adheres to the dominance of the oppressors. They can comply to their lower place in society. There are books that talk about all this stuff. When I was in Iraq, we went in there, we changed their curriculums in their schools. We changed the media. We gave them a curriculum that, that favored the possession of the U.S. government being in Iraq. So this system that we talk about not being being miseducated, undereducated, this is all by design. Our greatest problem is not a KKK member or a captured on a black man. These are people who sit down, political scientists, social engineering scientists, and they create society. We live in a scripted society. And the reason why we're given such a marginalized version of our education is because that's how they suppress us. Many black people don't know that there's so many of the inventions that we use today come from black minds. Now technology is for black minds. The reason why we have the internet is because of a black person. And a Nigerian professor created a supercomputer that ultimately led to the internet. But the most of our contribution is hidden.
Or stolen.
Recipient of welfare on white people. The largest benefactor of affirmative action are white women. We exist in a false, demoralizing bubble of ourselves. And it's all coming from the white man and how he maintains his dominance.
Right.
And see, what happens is that, you know, because of that, because of those deceptions, that's why people believe that what has happened to us is, especially for those who have accepted religion, particularly Christianity, believe that what has happened to us is ordained. And that,
that's the worst one.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, Lordy.
Yeah.
If you use common sense, if you study use common sense, you would see, you can see through the facade of Christianity. For example, we can say without a doubt that when the white Christians converted Africans into Christians, it had nothing to do with saving the souls of Africans so the Africans would join them in heaven in the afterlife, because the early white Christians believed the Africans had no souls and that heaven was for whites only. So we know that was another reason. The other the true self-serving reason was to indoctrinate them with a white image of a white god. It created an admiration toward whiteness that psychologically then moved on to white people, which made black people more compliant with white dominance over their lives. It was all psychological.
And also to make them docile, you know, and to believe that, you know, here in this physical world, you know, you are experiencing hell on earth, but you will get yours in the by and by,
right.
You know, so, I mean, what has happened to us and what is continuing to happen to us is it is a global phenomenon, you know, European Caucasian extremism. I like that, Paul. I've been using it ever since, brother. Thank you.
No, thanks very much. Thank you. It is appreciated because, you know, Brother Ochi, I don't think anybody can rationally argue that the European, his past history and his behavior can't be explained as extremist. I mean, he wants to marginalize a certain group and call them extremists, but reality, if you look at his behavior, and how each, I mean, Brother Ochi, sorry for interrupting, but I have to say this. Some of the images which we see coming out of America, these police killings and the brutality which we see, I'm telling you, it has a devastating effect on the mind of a young black person. When I was a young person, I wanted to go to America. My aunt was in America and it was the place to be. I have not heard one black person, a young person, say, my own children, have never mentioned America as a place to go. I mean, can you imagine? It's not a place for any young black person to go. That's how it's seen. I mean, and I think a lot of these images coming out, obviously, some of them, a great portion are propaganda. But we know that there is a reality on the ground of this excruciating brutality being dealt out. And, you know, and the other problem I have with it is that I feel in my heart, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, because all of you live in America, that some of it has become acceptable. And when we look at it, it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable for police to execute people in the street. It's just not acceptable. It's absolute lunacy, you know. And I'm not saying that we don't have our proportion of police brutality, because we do, right? But, you know, some of those images which we see, which are
absolute executions, state executions. And
yes,
we see that these people are walking free. I mean, that's an assault to any black person on the planet. And it must come to an end. It has to come to an end. It's unacceptable.
But see what
well,
it
we
is.
Have, we have,
oh, no,
we have
ahead,
a
sister.
Lot of brothers and sisters who are experiencing psychic trauma. So that's
yes.
why they keep showing you that over and over again. And, whenever I'm with any brothers, well, sisters too, but primarily brothers, is that your colonizer treats you as good as you treat yourself. So as long as we allow them, because for the most part we are allowing that to happen, as long as we allow them to kill us, and there is no consequence. Like there's a movie called Dry White Season, which
yes.
talked about
South Africa.
Steve Biko. Yes, talked about
yes.
Steve Biko. And in the movie, one of the last scenes in the movie talks about one of the captors and the some of the police that tortured Steve Biko suddenly were dismissed from the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like my best scene is like, if it took us a year or 2 years or whatever it took, those people who brutalized us are no longer walking on the planet. Is that the Europeans continue to do what they do to us because they have no fear. Is that the
yeah.
fear is on the opposite end, that we're afraid yeah. that if we speak out, if we dress a certain way, if we do this, we do that, whatever it is we do, whether you put your hands up, hands down, have a license, don't have a license, whatever it is unacceptable. Most people have not got that yet. What
yeah.
what we
Let
do
me just
know say- is that behavior continues unless there's a consequence. And the consequence is that if you put your hands on us, you're going to leave the planet. You, your mother, your cousin, your daughter, your dog. But that's not a reality because people are still so afraid. So I always talk about the defense, that if you're in war, there's some behaviors that you need to have in war. And it's not just discussion. You know, that the biggest revolutionary thing that most of us can do is to stay healthy. And the first thing is there is staying healthy is to be mentally alert. Is that the food we eat, the air, the propaganda through media, all of that is to dull us down so they can just eliminate us without any world outcry. I think as Dr. Cabone talks about, we're in a massive prison that's worldwide and don't recognize it, and we spend our time looking at who is better off than the other as opposed
yeah.
to who our open enemy is in the colony. So, you know, folks need to leave the planet.
Yeah. Well,
you know.
Well, you know, what's going to be interesting, you know, first let me just say this about white supremacy, you
mm-hmm.
know, because here in this society, once these things were happening, they kept talking about white
mm-hmm.
supremacists, as if
mm-hmm.
that's a small fringe group, and
oh,
our people
yeah, no.
were buying into
mm-hmm.
it, not understanding
mm-hmm.
the white supremacist is the government.
Mm-hmm.
The white supremacist
right.
is the industrialist. The white supremacist
right.
is the church. The white supremacist
mm-hmm.
is all of that. But yet people
mm-hmm.
focus on some little fringe group of cats wearing, carrying tiki torches and wearing khakis, you know,
right.
and stuff madness like
right.
that, you know. So they got to understand
yeah.
what the white supremacist truly is. But the other
right.
but the other piece is that looking very closely, brothers and sisters, at what's happening in South Africa. And,
mm-hmm.
and how that's going to play out. There is no
mm-hmm.
question in my mind that the United States and Europe are going to assist the Southern
mm-hmm.
Africans in a battle to maintain
right.
the land that they have stolen. It's going to be very
right.
interesting. And it's going to be interesting to see how we, particularly us here in America, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Our legislators, which ain't about nothing, they're going to
mm-hmm.
acquiesce. The religious community, the same thing. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I love Brother Malema. I remember hearing him and reading about him about a year or so ago and his push to reclaim the land that has been
mm-hmm.
stolen from Africans, to reclaim that
mm-hmm.
land, and the new president of South Africa and its administration have passed the law saying that we will take this land back without compensating these Caucasians. One thing that happened, of course, was that they said that some of the Caucasians can go to America. Some of the Caucasians can go back up into Europe, back to Holland, back to Germany, back to Britain, and so forth. But there are going to be some Caucasians. Because, see, understand this. There were some Caucasians who left South Africa when Nelson Mandela became the president because they could not fathom being under the rule of Africans. They just couldn't do, so they left. And some American Africans bought those homes. I seen a documentary about 10 or so years ago, maybe 15 years ago on that. But the deal is this. There were some Caucasians who territorialized themselves off and built a defense force to keep that land. And you mean to tell me they're going to give it up without a fight?
No.
It's going to be no, they're not.
But,
you know,
Brother Ochi,
yes.
Can I just make an objection? The South African brother, his name fails me now. You just mentioned the EFF. I think he's part of Economic Freedom.
Malema.
Yes, yes, yes. He's actually visited London quite a few times, and I've actually spoke to him, and I know people who know him personally, and he would be a good person to have on your show.
Oh, man, I would love it. You know. I would love it.
And also, while you mentioned that, it come to mind that there's another narrative being pushed about, which I've heard on American airwaves and over here also. I'm part of a group, and one of that particular person travels to Zimbabwe. She carries a group of people to Zimbabwe every year, and basically, there's a narrative being pushed about that when Mugabe freed up the land, took the land under the Land Reform Act or Land Reclaim Act, that he gave it to his cronies. We need to stop pushing this narrative about because it's not true. This is what the media is pushing about. When this is said, it's never mentioned that the Western powers had Zimbabwe under economic sanctions, severe economic sanctions. And it's just not true that he gave it to his cronies. And, you know, I'm not in the best position to explain this, but I know a person, like I say, she goes there every year with a group of people. She speaks. We just had the tourist minister for Zimbabwe come here, and they had a big conference. And they are begging. And I know this is fact. They have asked for American farmers to come to Zimbabwe and do the farming. When Mugabe was in power, he has given all sorts of sentiments for Americans to come. We need to stop following the narrative being pushed about, and we need to make the trips and make the connections ourselves, because it's not what you hear in the media is not what's happening. Trust me on this.
Right.
I agree. And go ahead, brother Frank.
I was just agreeing with what he said. Totally agree with what the brother saying. You know, often we talk because we are under so much frustration, the pain of racism, and sometimes it becomes where we become redundant. Our dialogue becomes like a treadmill. We're getting a PhD in talking about Black liberation. In reality, we have to provide information that elevates. And when you study, through studying the white man's propaganda, he's a master propaganda. And within his own doctrines, as taught in the CIA, the FBI, military war colleges, it teaches that the only way to fight propaganda, the only way, is with counter-propaganda. Counter-propaganda that exposes the falsehood in the original propaganda.
Right.
So we have to understand what is being done to us, and we have to explain to our people the truth. And the truth must be pushed like propaganda. It has to be pushed unrelentingly over and over, and that's how we rescue the minds of our people from the white man's propaganda. We have to understand, we have to study him, study his tactics, and we have to teach his tactics, and we must spread unrelentingly. That's how we liberate the minds of our people, through creating our own counter-propaganda. And continue teach. Therefore, what happens is the language doesn't just become a rhetoric. It doesn't become just talks on a treadmill. It becomes information that empowers those who learn it and teaches those to others. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we must do. We must come together. Sister Okosua, you were saying?
I use stories because we're Africans. And the Africans, we've always told stories. It's the stories to illustrate a point. And here's a story. There's a story that takes place in an African village. 3 months earlier, a European settler came, and they allowed these European settlers to live 3 miles to their right. All of a sudden, in the African village, everyone started getting sick. The elderly started dying. The babies started dying. Not knowing what was happening, the people started saying all sort of rumors, all sort of speculation. Some started assuming that they were cursed. Some said they, there's something wrong with the food. Everyone started accusing others with their problem. No one knew what was wrong. Okay? So when the people, however, received the true knowledge, and the true knowledge was that the enemies, those Europeans that fell 3 miles down the road from them, was actually poisoning their well water. Once they received the knowledge that their well water was being poisoned, this created out of a necessity to survive, to save themselves, they implemented systems. They stopped drinking from the water. They dug a new well. They put guards on the new well. They went after the enemy and threw them off their land. The proper information elevated your mind. And that's why it's important for us to stop running around in speculation and this, and understand, study the ways of the enemy, and then teach our people what the enemy is doing to us. We must teach our people.
Mm-hmm. And see, I've always stated that, you know, we must understand the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us to make us behave and act and think and do how we've been. In fact, I use this analogy. It is a vice grip. Once you know that tool, once you've set the vice grip, not even so-called Hercules can pull the vice grip apart. There's a knob at the end of the handle of the vice grip. And that knob is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self, consciousness.
Precisely.
By turning that knob, now you can release the vice grip and look at the European for who and what they are. Not that you'll change them, because there's nothing we can do or say that will change how Caucasians act, behave, and think. It's a total waste of time. What we do is talk to each other, work with each other, build with each other, teach each other, gain the confidence that we should have for and with each other to break down those barriers that have been placed on us. And all the divisions, all the factionalism that has been placed upon us to work together. And I'm talking about a global, because this program is about independence for African people, self-determination for African people, liberation for African people, and sovereignty for African people, period. That's what we discuss every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That's the program. And I would venture to say, what I do is just, I'm not that all that intelligent or anything like that. I'm just trying to provide a method and a conduit for that to happen. So we can hear brothers and sisters like Paul and Brother Franklin, Sister Okosua, and all the other people, and the callers who call in and how passionate they are. In fact, we have a caller. Let me get this caller right here. We have a caller. 215, go ahead, 215. Go ahead, 215. You're on. Maybe they just want to listen. Okay. But, you see, I understand the war that we are in for the minds of our people. I understand this is intellectual warfare, as Jacob Carruthers, in his outstanding book, Intellectual Warfare. I understand this. And I've been dealing with this for quite a number of years. And I understood that maybe if I can get a radio program, and this would be the only conversation, everything that we talk about would be from that perspective, no matter what it is, whether it's relationships, sports, whatever, would be from that perspective, because we got to understand how we are being manipulated, how we are being undermined, how we are being controlled by a system that is designed literally to kill us. or, mm-hmm. and, or at least have us to kill ourselves. And that system is a global system. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a global system. And the main country that helps continue that system in a forceful way is the United States of America and its policies.
That's exactly right.
You see, Brother OG, another thing, the thing is that we have all the tools at our disposal. We have everything in place, absolutely everything. What we don't have is the mindset.
Yes.
The problem is this, yeah? The only reason why I knew about Brother Franklin is through his work on the internet, on a particular social media site. That's why I knew. Nothing else. That's how I come into contact with him. Now, how I learned about this radio station is through social media, right? Now, we cannot underestimate the power of technology. And technology doesn't belong to anybody or any group of people. Technology comes from the imagination. If you can take a stone and use it as a tool, it's technology. Technology is the ability to create something which makes it practical and easy to you to make a maneuver and better yourself. So with this technology, which I'm using now to communicate with you, we must learn and understand it, because right now there's never been a better time for us to unite. And when we talk about uniting is not a soundbite. It's not something we say. It must be something we do.
That's right.
So if I write a book, if I sing a song and people are singing it, then we're united. If I put a poem and you want to read it and you can work off it, we're united. And we've got to recognize that. Unification isn't a soundbite. It's an action.
Right.
And as long as we're in the animation, and the animation is for our liberation, we are united. And we must stop this other nonsense talk about we're not united. Because as Brother Frank says, that's all psychological warfare. We are uniting in every aspect. You know, I must say this. I must throw this in. And I know a lot of people may not like this. I grew up on rap music. I did. I grew up on rap music. I saw it from the beginning. When I was in New York, there was a radio station called Kiss FM. We used to get beats. We used to bring them back to England and sell them. Right? And people used to love it. I see it from the beginning. Now, my brother was a graffiti artist, and he's won some awards equivalent to we call them BAFTAs. He worked for the BBC. He got recruited by Richard Branson for his work. That came out of hip-hop. Not all of us took rap music and turned it into negativity. We made the best out of it. So we must stop looking down on things we are doing, which are helping us to unite. Because we didn't take rap music and go out and shoot and kill one another. We took it, and I still love it to this day. I think it's a fantastic platform and a fantastic art form. Sure. When I look on the internet and see that every other race, there's a thing called Backpack, and I'm sure it's run by some Europeans in America, and they go around the world, and every, from Bangladesh to China, you see them feeding off of rap music, and it's painful to watch, painful. And they are using rap music to express themselves and growing off of it, and we are putting it down. We have to know that unification comes from an action, you know, and we must stop following the narrative of our oppressors.
Right. Well, see, Paul, it's like this, though. They co-opted it. When I played Grandmaster Flash at the break, the message was, to me, one of the baddest rap songs ever, one of. You know, but that is the time that we controlled it. I will never forget listening to Sister Soulja on National Public Radio talking about that transformation from conscious rap or hip hop to gangster.
Gangster rap.
And she said, I will not be. She said, you know, I'm done with it because that, number one, I can't get a deal. They won't give me a deal. They won't give KRS-One a deal. They're going to give that to them thug rappers, because when they started talking about N-word this, N-word that, B this, B that, light skin, dark skin, drugs, gangsters, shoot, and so forth. I mean, so the reality is that the rap that needs to counter that needs to be louder. But, of course, who's controlling it? Who gives it
airwaves? Brother Ochi, We've got that material. I mean, as you speak, I'm thinking of some UK rap. We've got some beautiful tracks that I'd have to play. And I spoke to one of them, and I said, you know, why, like you say, why isn't it out there? Why? But he says it's not popular.
well, let's stop following what's popular. Let's do what's right.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's the thing.
I just wanted to say also, we keep trying to use the Europeans' distribution methods. In other words, there are ways that we can get our message to the people other than through the European. And so that's where creativity comes in. We have a number of brothers and sisters who are doing spoken word and rap, and it's positive. But a lot of folks don't know about it because if it's not played on the radio, you know, they're not paying attention to, we could be using it in our barbershops, in our restaurants, and whatever it is where we can get the message out. We using that creativity to do that is some of the things that I think Brother Franklin said. We have all the tools. We just don't use them the way to our benefit.
That's true.
I have a client. I have to go, guys.
All right. Well, thank you for your contribution, Sister Kosowa. Appreciate you. Talk with you real soon. Peace.
Everyone, have a blacknificent day.
A blacknificent day we will.
It's been a pleasure.
Brothers and sisters.
Love and respect.
Brothers and sisters, we're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Our phone number here to talk with us is 215-490-9832, and we have a caller, 646. Area code.
Brother Oshi.
Hey, Brother Jay, how you
Brother
doing?
Oshi.
What's up, Jay?
Hey, enjoying this show, you know, just came in. You know, I was glad that I heard you speak a little bit about the situation in South Africa. Listen, I'm a proponent of bringing back the burning necktie over there. That's what's going to have to be done in order to deal with them Yorubas over there, because they're not going to get the land up. You know, truthfully, they shouldn't get the land up, because we need to learn these type of lessons. When you take something from somebody, fight till the death and don't give it back. We have to reverse the paradigm sometimes on our humanity when dealing with the Yorugu, because Yorugu is a beast like no other on the planet. He's shown it from the time that he's come into our midst that he only has one agenda, and it's to kill Africa. And for some reason, we as a people do not realize that Yorugu is your perpetual enemy. He will do any and everything to kill you. And for some reason, we find that is not what the deal is because of our so-called integration with this beast, us mating with this beast, us dealing with this beast. But we never fail to realize and understand that whenever dealing with the beast, he's always, always in the power position. And he keeps himself in power position because he holds one thing over you. He's willing to kill you and feel nothing of it. That's the situation in South Africa now. They control the military. They control the resources.
That's right.
Control all of the wealth. And just like in America, you have a few Negro peens that have a little bit of wealth that are the bosses and are the gatekeepers between the two. And until we realize that people like Oprah Winfrey, Michael Jordan, and the rest of those Negroes are really our enemies, because they don't even call each other correctly to do anything to make the position of the Negro King better. Brethren, those that are looking to achieve what they achieve, they don't put anything in place to help them become the next so-called billionaire or the next so-called buffer between them and the Yorugu. So until we start to realize and think clearly what our relationship is with the Yorugu, we can always be in this position. There's only one solution. But the next time, it's an ambassador. And dying is possible.
No.
And we just don't understand it, brother. And that's here everywhere else. Because the Yorugu is never, ever, ever going to stop trying to commit genocide on you and your people.
Well, you know what, Brother Jay? I believe that we are, just as it was said, we are the ones who could not be killed when we suffered what we have suffered. And I understand what you're saying clearly. But to me, at this stage of our people globally, on the continent, throughout the diaspora, from a military standpoint, it would be suicidal. But only thing that we have to do, just as Brother Paul said, and of course my guest host, Brother Franklin Jones, has stated, is change our minds. If our minds are right, and we have a collective mindset, that we will purge ourselves of all this ignorance, all this stupidity, all this pettiness, all this selfishness, and come together as African people. I've often said, Brother Jay, that the most revolutionary thing that we can do at this very moment is declare that we are an African people. I am an African, and I'm connected to all other African people, and I am willing to fight and die for African people, for a sovereign land on the continent, because it can't happen here. It definitely can't happen here, and it sure in hell can't happen in the UK or anywhere else on the European soil.
Oshie, you're right. But the thing that I think you may be missing in is going to have to take some of us dying and being the sacrifice.
I'm sorry, Jay. Go ahead, say that again, because I didn't hear you.
China, in the direction that Mao took the people in before. There was a lot of lives that were sacrificed.
Oh, no.
And Mao did what he had to do.
Right.
And now look at China. They have power. They have world power. Because they made the sacrifice of eliminating their so-called traitors, their so-called dead weight. And those that were the rebels had to die, and those needed to be killed had to die. Now, can we do that here in America? No, we can't do that here in America. But the thing is, when did things really change in South Africa? When the death toll just got to be out of hand on both sides, in a sense. So we had a point in our development, people, to where as we are too much bedded with the Yoruba, intermarrying with them. We're working with them more and more. We're always trying to make coalitions with them. You know, this whole process with the voting and all of this nonsense going on, you know what I mean? It's like we're constantly in a position to where we're trying to solidify the Yoruba's thing instead of our thing. It's just like, you know, talk about South Africa, and you're saying earlier that America may make a move on South Africa. I disagree with you. The reason why they won't make a move in South Africa, but maybe Russia or China may make a move in South Africa, is because that's not on the landscape or the mindset of that piece of garbage that's in the hookie's house. You know what I mean? He doesn't have any type of interactions or feelings whatsoever over in Africa. And his administration is in such chaos that I don't even know, honestly, if they have any people focusing on the African continent.
Oh, so yeah, they do.
You see China and Russia doing what they're doing, moving in and colonizing Africa on the level that they are. So, I mean, we're in a position in South Africa, and these other African nations are in a position to weed themselves off the back of this Yoruba American. So, I mean, all I'm trying to say is if we collectively focus on, like you say, identifying ourselves as African, addressing and dealing with this sick Negro king who's just trying to place us more and more into slavery, which is whiteness, and building institutions to where, as like you were earlier saying, distribution and things of that nature. I don't understand, honestly, why we in this country as African people, haven't set up some type of distribution network. I don't know if it's because we fear that this filthy, stinking, no good Jew is going to stop it or something else, but it just amazes me how we aren't in a position to do it. And I'll leave you with this, Brother Oshie. You got a Negro peen who sleep Yorugu, got a Yorugu wife, that has, I guess, the third largest distribution company as far as media goes in this country. That filthy, no good garbage man, Brian Allen. Now, everybody is so happy about the Black Panther. Now, you can't tell me that collectively our people can't put together and put together a movie and produce it, direct it, and do the necessary things to put forward a new and better version of a comic book fantasy character. Whereas that Negro, Byron Allen, couldn't distribute it. And based on the numbers, what we have given to this Yorugu in regards to that movie, Black Panther, no movie of that genre should fail. But you think we would do that? No. We want the daddy to do it. We want to give the daddy the money. We don't want to give ourselves the money or bet on ourselves. So until we get to that point and we realize that we need to start doing for ourselves and hold these Negro peens accountable to make sure that they do what they do, bruh, we just going to stay in this position.
I hear you.
And
all
I
right.
don't want to be in this position.
No, I don't either.
I'd rather die than be in this position.
I hear you.
Because I'm just, there's a better life.
I hear you.
And have a beautiful day to
you
your
too.
Guests from to England, the Queen's land. As a matter of fact, let me ask the brother from England. What do they think over in England, the Africans, of this mulatto Becky Margaret Michael, who's now going to give herself to a supreme, no good Yorugu devil, Prince Harry, or whatever the hell his name is? What do the people of African descent think of this buffoonery and foolishness with this half-breed?
Well, Brother Jay, yes, it's good to speak with you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Listen, I think, to be honest with you, among the conscience, so-called conscious people, there's not much talk. It's, you know, there's a saying here, what you pay attention to becomes your reality. And I don't think there's a great deal of people, certainly in the circles I'm moving, who are paying attention to it. It's not my reality and it's not their reality. So let it be what it is and let it be what it may be. But, you know, seriously, I mean, the mass media is the mass media, and they'll spin, put their spin on it, and they'll put their agenda behind it. But some of us are too grown to be following that agenda. We know what we've got
to
do. Can I just say this to you, Brother Jay?
Yes,
listen,
my brother.
A platform like this, Time for Awakening, right, and Black Talk, really, I hear you on some other platforms, you know, With all due respect, we have to start realizing that we are the ones who are going to change it. Nobody else. We are the people we've been waiting for.
That's right.
Nobody's going to change it. Me speaking to you and you speaking to me. We are the ones who are going to change this. Nobody else. I'm not waiting on nobody to change anything for me. And I'm sure you're not either. So the reality of it is, I don't need to wait for this white man to do anything for me. I know what he's done. I know what he is. I know what I've got to do. And that's why I'm speaking on this platform. And, you know,
amen.
we've got to build up these institutions. You know, thanks for Brother Elliot and Talk Radio and all the brothers who put in this work. You know,
but
this is the way forward, and we will do it.
But aren't you having a show on the network yourself coming pretty soon? Because,
brother,
because listen, we need to connect with brothers like yourself.
We're doing it. And I thank, you know, I must give the highest praises to Brother Elliot and Brother Ochi. You know, my only issue is the fact that you know as well as I do that you're, you know, you have bills to pay and you have a roof over your head to maintain and you're stuck in the matrix.
That's right.
So yeah. About,
that's right.
You know, so I spoke to Brother Elliot not so long ago, and you know, thank the Most High for him, but you know, I have to be. I'm just, all I'm asking for is a little patience to sort out my schedule so I can do this thing properly. I don't want to get involved in it just for the sake of just doing it for my own ego. I want to do it so it's done properly, just like we're doing it today, done right.
Hey,
and
brother,
I just need a bit of time to sort that out. That's it.
Outstanding.
Hey, brother, let me say this to you. We will be patiently waiting for you. And if you could do what you're doing today, come on, Brother Oshie's show, and share with us, it'll only make it much easier for you once you hit on a regular period of time, because you'll already be introduced to an audience of people who are like-minded as yourself and African spirit. And Hotep, have a beautiful day. And
Hotep, Brother Jay, thank you, my brother.
You do what you do. Thank you, Brother Poole.
Thank you.
Thanks for your support. That was needed, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Right on, Brother Jay. Brother Franklin.
Yes. Hey, I want to say something to Brother Paul. I want to say, Paul, hey, I appreciate things you said to me. I want you to know that the Black Matrix page has been unpublished by Facebook. It's still there, but you can't do anything on it. I've created a new page called the Black Matrix Reloaded, and I hope you continue to follow me there.
Brother, I'll support you. I'll support you any way I can support you, because you're doing some real work and it's necessary. It's a beautiful thing. And we don't need to just rely on that. We can build up. I've got some, you know, I've lined up guests to come on this platform, and I know you need to hear these people,
yeah,
because you need to know that they're there. You need to know that we're here and what we're doing. They are in Africa, in Gambia, they're in Zimbabwe, they're in
yes,
where else? Nigeria. They're all over Africa, and they go there frequently. We've got housing projects being built in Gambia, and we need to link, because we're doing these things. We are making these connections. We need to talk about it.
And that's where I'm coming from with this. That's where I'm coming from, that the African, with that African spirit, link up on the continent, throughout the diaspora, to change the dynamics on the continent and have a place for us. Malcolm said, the African will never be respected globally until Africa is free and in control control by Africans. It will never. And you can see it globally. We have no friends. But listen, our time is running out, and we got a caller. I want to get this caller in. We have another caller from across the pond. The last three digits is 310. Go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, greetings. It's a great show, and I would like to say something about why the oppression is still going on. I think we have to look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was in 1789, and at that time we were still under slavery. And there was another one, Declaration of Human Rights, in 1948, and the African countries were still under colonization. So I think all these things need to be examined as well, because they're still on that same law, if I can say. But apparently we are not part of it, because they still treat us bad. So that was what I wanted to say.
Well, thank you for your contribution. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We only have a couple of minutes.
We have to check that. Yeah.
All right, sister. Thank you.
Because we preaching, we ask for human rights, but we are not in it. So we have to go back to the Declaration of Black Man's Rights of Marcus Garvey.
Ashe.
This is our own.
That's
so that's
right.
All I wanted to say.
Thank you, sister.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Okay, brother Franklin.
Yes.
Any closing remarks very quickly, and I'm gonna get to Paul. Then I gotta close out.
Okay, real quick, everyone say this was a fantastic show. I love this show. I love contacting, interacting with those from around the world. This is powerful. And brother, keep doing what you do, Brother O'Shea. This is a fantastic show.
Thank you.
Do what you're doing.
Thank you.
And I hope somehow to get a phone exchange information with Brother Paul. Somehow I'll get my information so we can stay in contact.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Brother Paul? very quickly.
We are the ones we've been waiting for. That's nobody right. else can and solve our problems. Our problems ain't in the hands of the white man. Our problems is our own, and we have to be the ones to solve it. And we can solve it, and we will win.
America is yeah. much more damaging.
And you're right. And you're right. Brothers and sisters, we close this program like we close all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because we as African people, we stand on the land that has all the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Dr. John Henry Clark quote. Peace, my brothers. Have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace.